Hello, this is Hugh Baird, and I'm your moderator for this evening's discussion. I'm here with State Senator Jay Koss, and we want to welcome you to this live telephone town hall. If you have a question for Senator Costa this evening, press star 3 on your phone's keypad. That's star 3 on your phone's keypad if you have a question for Senator Costa this evening. Now I'd like to welcome Senator Costa.
Well, thank you very much, Hugh, and I'm going to thank all the folks who are participating this evening in our telephone town hall. Tonight's purpose is to have a conversation of the budget address that was given today, earlier today, by Governor Tom Wolf. I'd like to be able to take a few moments to talk about the specifics of that and then open the call to questions regarding the budget address or any other type of question that folks have. I want to hear from the constituency across this, our district, and give them the opportunity to talk about issues that are relevant here in Harrisburg, but also in Pittsburgh and Allegheny County as well. That all being said, I think as folks know, that earlier today, Governor Wolf proposed his 2019-2020 budget. And it's a budget that continues to build upon the progress that we've made collectively over the past 4 years. It continues to focus heavily on education, workforce development, and addressing our social safety net programs that are very, very important to our folks across the county and across the Commonwealth. It also takes a look at making investments, significant investments in the agriculture industry, as well as military personnel are also prioritized with regard to a GI Bill for Pennsylvania, which I think is quite unique. There are a number of other policy initiatives that the governor has talked about, which we can get into momentarily, but I want to give the specifics, if I could, about the budget itself. Governor's proposal was a $34.146 billion budget. It increases spending by about 2.8%, which is a modest increase, given the cost associated with our cost drivers and the like. In the education realm, the governor is again proposing a basic education increase of $200 million for our school districts across Pennsylvania, $50 million for special ed, $50 million for early learning programs, which means about $40 million additional dollars into the pre-K program and $10 million into our Head Start program. And as I said on this program and before, the best dollars we spend in government, I think, are pre-K. This year, the governor is looking to also expand those resources, being able to deal with our individuals, our babies and our toddlers, developing programs through our four-star programs to be able to enhance and to grow the number of slots we have available to provide for our babies and toddlers. So it's something I'm excited about. Along the lines of the workforce training and workforce development, which has been a key issue of the governor for a number of years, making sure that we're in a position to grow a workforce that meets the needs of our Commonwealth industries and the like. The governor's again putting about $10 million back into the career and technical education program and also looking to do other things along the lines of apprenticeship programs, restoring the $7 million to the apprenticeship program that we've done in the past. He will also increase the PA First program by $5 million and a career training grant for $4 million in the PA manufacturing community. Those are just a couple of the things along those lines. Governor, again, is proposing a minimum wage increase, this time to $12 per hour, hoping that we can then, beyond that, set in place a process by which we get to $15 going forward over a series of years. The goal along those lines is to make sure that we do a number of things to be able to provide a workforce that has the opportunity to live at a wage that is reasonable to allow folks to sustain themselves going forward. Additionally, in the area of education, the governor has flat-funded higher education this year, as he's done in years past. So there'll be no increase for Pitt, Penn State, Lincoln, or Temple, or state-related. No increase for community colleges. However, he is going to attempt to create a new program in the community college realm across Pennsylvania that will provide grant funding, an amount of up to $2,500 for those individuals who graduate from a community college like CCAC and agree to stay in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. They have to have an associate's degree and then work in Pennsylvania, and they would be receiving a $2,500 grant to offset their tuition along those lines. Finally, as I mentioned, a new program the governor's doing as well is a military family education program. Yeah, I've had the opportunity and the privilege the last several years of serving as the chairperson of the Veterans Affairs and Military Preparedness Committee, Emergency Preparedness Committee, and working with General Corelli and our National Guard folks. One of the things that we've talked about is being able to provide opportunities for those men and women who serve in the National Guard to even further their education, but also their family members as well, who also sacrificed as well. This program would allow a GI Bill, essentially, for those individuals. So we're excited about that conversation that will take place as we go forward. One other thing the governor will continue to do will be putting resources into public safety, making sure that we have the resources, particularly as it relates to our community schools. We put into place last year a program that allowed about $60 million to be placed into a school, what I'll call school protection and also community violence programs, school safety programs. And those resources actually will be driven out probably in the next 3 or 4 weeks. School districts, every school district has already received some of that money from this year's budget, but all the other programs and community dollars will be going out as we go forward as well to be able to protect our students. And everything from hardening our schools with respect to metal detectors and other things along those lines, to also providing to our schools, and legislation I worked on last year was to provide school counselors and school personnel to provide and work with the students who are dealing with issues that need to be addressed. Those are some of the important aspects of the governor's proposal. Probably most importantly is the fact that there's no broad-based tax increase in this at all. In fact, the only tax increase that the governor even has been talking about, which falls outside the general fund budget, is the Marcellus extraction tax increase. Governor's proposing that we do a shale tax, and then the proceeds from that shale tax, up to maybe $300 million, would be used to help create a $4.5 billion investment fund, an infrastructure investment fund. So when we need to have a conversation about addressing, for example, flooding and landslides in Pennsylvania, that we have a fund that we'd be able to go to, an infrastructure fund. When we talk about making sure that we have infrastructure investments in technology and broadband across Pennsylvania, there will be a pot to be able to assist those communities who desperately need high-speed access to the Internet and the like that don't have it today, giving them the opportunity to build that infrastructure out for a variety of different reasons. Also looking at our roads and bridges, and also looking at other types of infrastructure investments, water and sewer and the like, which will be part of that conversation. That's separate and apart from the governor's budget address, but it's something I think it's important for folks to know as we move forward. That is a quick summary of the budget, some of the highlights. What I'd like to do now is open it up to questions that folks may have on the budget, things I didn't mention, or issues outside the budget before we can talk about that as well. So, Hugh, who's first on the line?
Well, we're going to go down the line, but for those of you that just joined us, if you have a question for Senator Acosta this evening, press *3 on your phone's keypad. That's *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to our first caller is Charlotte in Swissvale. Charlotte, go ahead. You're live with Senator Acosta. Charlotte, are you there?
Yes, I am. Senator Acosta, I wanted to ask what is happening to the tax revenue that we're collecting from the Rivers Casino, the casinos that are in Pennsylvania?
That's a great question. We collect probably in excess around $1 billion a year in tax revenue. Primarily the biggest chunk comes from the slot machines. It's a lower percentage on the table games. And then more recently, sports betting is about 36%, 34% to the state, 2% local. Most of that money, about $750 to $800 million a year, is sent out to homeowners across Pennsylvania. It provides property tax relief to every single homeowner as a primary residence. So you live in Swissvale, you're part of the Woodland Hill School District, you're probably receiving on your tax bill a $200 or so break or $200 reduction in your school property taxes, as is every homeowner as a primary residence in Swissvale. But that's not the only place that money goes. In Allegheny County, I've been able to negotiate about $40 million a year that makes its way back to Allegheny County, and only Allegheny County alone. Over the past 12 years, 11 years, we're going on our 12th year, we've been able to drive about $400-some million to Allegheny County residents from this tax, the revenue created. $150 million has gone in every year, about $12 million into our airport. $6.6 million goes into what's called the Community Infrastructure Tourism Fund. That's been helping local governments across the region. Swissvale, we work closely with Swissvale on some repairs on Braddock Avenue. We've done some demolition in Braddock. We took down the GAR building. Those are all county tax dollars. Those are all gaming dollars that make their way through there. That's where it's going. Part of it goes to support the what's now called the Pittsburgh Paints Arena. $7.5 million a year from that tax revenue goes there every year for the next 20 years to support that facility. But the lion's share of it has gone into property tax relief. In addition to that, we send a significant portion to a program called the Property Tax and Rent Rebate Program. Now, going forward, we may just make changes to incorporate sports betting and online gaming and online lottery and the like. The revenue from that group of money coming in will also be making its way in part to property tax relief, but also in Allegheny County alone, and we were able to negotiate this for our county alone, another $24 million a year that will come in into perpetuity to Allegheny County for economic development, for the airport, and a sports commission that I think I referenced earlier. That totals about, as I mentioned, $24 million. In addition to that, the city of Pittsburgh gets $10 million every year from the gaming funds, and also the Allegheny County receives about $6.7 million every year to offset some of their costs associated with gaming. That's the bulk of where the money goes, and it's similar, except for the gaming money I mentioned that's unique to Allegheny County, the other counties don't receive any of that. So that's sort of where the bulk of the tax money goes to from gaming.
Charlotte, thank you very much for your call. As a reminder for those that have just joined us, if you have a question for Senator Acosta tonight, you can press *3 on your phone's keypad. That's *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Connie in Wilkinsburg. Connie, go ahead. You're live with Senator Acosta.
Hi, Senator Acosta. My question is about the State Insurance Commission that I know is the commissioner is appointed by our governor. And the fact that they have let this debacle go on with Highmark and UPMC Insurance that now has come to fruition, that we, the common people, are not going to be able to use these facilities interchangeably. And I just wanted to know if anything is being done to help us with that.
Connie, the answer to the question is yes. I would ask you to stay tuned until Thursday. I can tell you that Thursday there will be an announcement made by the Attorney General on this issue that I think you'll be happy to hear. I can't get into the specifics about what that might be. I had a conversation with him about an hour ago following up on that. I've been working on and have legislation that I'll be introducing that basically would require UPMC and Highmark to contract with one another. And if you are a Highmark customer and you wanted to go, to a UPMC facility, that you have the ability to do that. They need to sit down and figure out a price about what the cost of that service might be, and if they can't agree, we put into legislation a process by which what I would call sort of our binding arbitration with respect to the fees associated with it. So while the divorce is pending on June 30th, I think you'll hear a good conversation coming Thursday, and that will possibly address the concern that you raised. I share the concern. So many people have talked to me about this issue. It's one that I've been at the forefront. I was part of the development of the consent decree 5 years ago, working with the governor, then Governor Corbett, and Senator White from Indiana County, our banking chairman, and insurance chairman. And we were able to get the sides to agree to a consent order, and that's now coming to an end. But I do think that you're going to see a conversation on Thursday along those lines that will begin to address and maybe hopefully get us to a place where the June 30th deadline may not happen.
Connie, thank you very much for your call. Again, if you have a question for Senator Acosta, press *3 on your phone's keypad. That's *3 on your phone's keypad. So we're going to go back to the callers. We'll go to Joseph. Joseph, go ahead. You're live with Senator Acosta.
Yes, my question concerns the enormously high gas tax that we're shackled with. All adjoining states, in fact, all states in the union, have a lower gas tax than we do. Many have just as many roads as we do. Texas has more. Yet we're shackled with this enormously high gas tax, and I feel that this should be addressed by the legislature. What's your opinion on this?
Thank you very much. I think that's a great question. I do think that we need to address it. I will tell you, though, the dollars that come in from the gas tax are driven right back out into our roadways. It's not as if it goes to, it doesn't go into the general fund budget, for example. It's dollars that come in and are made their way back out to repair our roads and extend our roads and the like. The conversation needs to continue as we go forward. Part of that gas tax is related to the changes or expansion of the Montfayette Expressway in Western PA. There's a segment or portion of that is peeled off for that particular purpose. And there's some parts of that have been very beneficial to a number of folks across the Commonwealth. But you're right, we have to take a look at that. And that's what I think we did that. When we did Act 89, We did reduce the gas tax by, I think, 2 cents, but then since then we've then increased it by I think, 6 cents, additional cents at the end of the day. But that's providing the money we need to make the investments, not only in our roads and bridges, but also into mass transit. You know, our mass transit system in Allegheny County was on the verge of what I would call collapse, a 35% route reduction, significantly impacting weekend and evening hours. We were also looking at inadequate resources to provide for the capital for our buses and the like, but also our airports and our bridges, for example, were a big part of that conversation. That's where those tax dollars go. So it's not just into roads and bridges, but it's also into mass transit and to airports and the like as well. But I don't think you're going to see anything along the lines of any additional increases in gasoline tax. In fact, I think you might see in western part of the state a ratcheting back of the special gas that we're required to have during the summer season. I guess it's referred to as the summer blend, which is responsible for, I think, anywhere from 6 to 8 cents per gallon going forward. I think that's an EPA requirement that we're trying to work to relax, and hopefully we'll be able to be at that point in time soon.
Joseph, thank you very much for your question. If you have a question for Senator Acosta this evening, press *3 on your phone's keypad, *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to the callers. We're going to go to Liz in Braddock. Liz, go ahead. You're live with Senator Acosta.
Good evening, Senator Acosta. How are you?
I'm well, Liz. How you doing?
Oh, I'm fine. Hey, listen, I have a question for you. I know that Jake Weekly just authorized a bill to go into the congressmen, to the senators, and legalizing marijuana. Just wondering about your thoughts on it. I personally don't agree with it, because I don't think there's been enough research done to be able to say whether it really is a safe product. But I was just wondering what's your view on it.
Well, thanks, Liz, and thanks for calling in, and thanks for the work you do in the community with Clifton and so many others. We appreciate that. I will tell you, I think this conversation warrants discussion here in Harrisburg. Lieutenant Governor Fetterman from Braddock has now begun a process by which he'll be going to, I think, every county in the Commonwealth, soliciting comments from individuals around the Commonwealth to see what they think about this proposal. I don't know whether we'll get it done this year, if it gets done this year or not. I know there's been strong opposition from my colleagues on the Republican side, particularly my colleague, the Senate Majority Leader Cormann, but I do think the conversation is warranted at this point in time. The revenue that people talk about, while it's very enticing, I think we also need to recognize that there are some other concerns that we need to look at. In fact, I think I saw an article in one other state where they're dealing with some of the repercussions of how they implemented recreational marijuana in those states. So I think we have to look and see what other states have been doing, find out what our Pennsylvanians feel, also look at what other states are doing in terms of and what they probably wish they would have done, so we can learn from whatever mistakes are there along those lines. But I do think the conversation is warranted, whether comes home as part of this budget address. I doubt that at right this point in time, but I do think it's something we have to talk about. So thanks, Liz.
Liz, thank you very much for your callers. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers, but before we do, just a reminder for those that just joined us, if you have a question for Senator Acosta this evening, press *3 on your phone's keypad. That's *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We'll go to Sabrina. Sabrina, go ahead. You're live with Senator Acosta. Sabrina, are you there? Hello?
This is Sabrina from Swissvale.
Yep.
Hi, Sabrina.
Hello?
Go ahead. You're live with Senator Acosta.
Yes. Hi, Senator. I wanted to ask about all the abandoned buildings in the city, the abandoned housing. In some places, I wanted to know, is any money going to go towards that? I know, like, in some of the inner cities, like it's neighborhoods full of like abandoned row houses in some places. And I just wanted to know, would anything be done towards those type of situations?
I would say to you, there are resources that are available through various line items in the Department of Community Economic Development that could assist a community to address abandoned and blighted properties. I know that the Allegheny County, for example, has a blighted property program, and they work to either eradicate some of these buildings or actually work with other groups to rehabilitate them. I know I've worked with, through Pennsylvania Housing Financing Agency, a program called the FAIR program. We've been able to drive resources to different community groups to do rehabs. I think it's called Rebuild Allegheny or Rebuild Pittsburgh. We work with them to get them resources to do precisely what I think you're talking about, rehabilitate some of these homes. But there are demo programs, demolition programs that we work with our local governments. There was a question about gaming resources. You know, I work with a number of communities and provided them resources to be able to do that. So that's a request from a local municipality, Swissvale in particular, to do some demolition. Wilkinsburg as well, we've worked with them to do the same thing, be able to provide them resources to do demolition. But those dollars are hard to come by. One of the challenges right now that we're hearing from local officials is the cost of demolition a residence right now has really increased significantly. It used to be $5,000 or $6,000 to demo a place, a building, but now because of EPA requirements and working through the health department, this whole issue of asbestos is a major concern, and the cost to remediate the asbestos before tearing the facility down has probably tripled the cost to demo a home from like $5,000 or $6,000 to like $18,000 to $20,000. So that's one of the challenges that folks are dealing with. So if you're able to do a grant for $200,000, instead of maybe getting 25 homes done, you're only able to get maybe 9 or 10 done, and that's been a problem as well. The resources are limited though, and but that's become a problem. It's got to be a priority of whether it be the city of Pittsburgh or any local municipality. It's got to be a priority for them to make that something they need to do.
Sabrina, thank you very much for your question. If you have a question for Senator Acosta, press *3 on your phone's keypad. That's *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Amy in Pittsburgh. Amy, go ahead. You're live with Senator Acosta.
Okay. Senator, how do you think you can help pass the shale tax?
Well, I think probably the most significant thing is the governor's indicated it's not going to be part of the general fund budget. And I think that's important because I think part of the holdback was that my colleagues on the other side of the aisle were not interested in having those resources sort of be, in their view, dumped into what some have called a black hole. So now that we have a very targeted purpose, the debt service to be able to borrow $4.5 billion and then tying it to the use being tied to impacting everyone across the Commonwealth, particularly rural communities, that's how we build, I believe, how we build a consensus. Letting folks know in advance that if we do this, the proceeds from the Marcellus Shale tax will be invested in a bond fund or into a fund that over time will drive out $4.5 billion to every corner of Pennsylvania. It won't be just in Pittsburgh and Allegheny County. It'll be in rural Pennsylvania that need the broadband help. It'll be in rural Pennsylvania where they need the water and sewer issues to address. I think that's one way we do it. Now, I want to remind you, last year or a year and a half or so ago, we did pass the Marcellus Shale tax in the Senate. I worked very closely with my Senate colleague, Senator Jay Corman, to get a Marcellus Shale tax passed the Senate. Unfortunately, it died in the House. We'll continue to build upon those relationships and working relationships we have on this issue because I know that now we have a very definable purpose for those resources that I think all members on both parties would be able to enjoy, and that's something we're working on.
Amy, thank you very much for your call. We're going to go back to the caller, Senator. We're going to go to Michael in Munn Hall. Michael, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Senator. Congratulations. And and your two callers, Connie, I was real interested, and I'll wait for Thursday to hear about Highmark and UPMC. Should have never been allowed to separate. But the infrastructure, I don't think enough is being done. I cannot believe it's cheaper to pour asphalt every year or every 2 years than it is to pour concrete once every 10 years. But my main issue is that I was listening to you talking about the security, and the most priority is the security of our children in schools. And I say here in Pittsburgh, we have the most intelligent young folks in the Carnegie Mellon and Pitt. And why do we have to put men with guns in school? Whereas they can come up, you have drones, you have all type of high tech that can be fixed outside of the building, and you know when someone walk on the property with a weapon that they never get to enter the door. They either lock automatically or summon the police department. But a police officer or an officer, anyone with a gun on the east side of the school and the problem going the west side, it's a little too late when he get there, or why should he always be in harm's way? So I wish they're looking at other things other than guns sitting in a hallway in a class. Our children are getting too used to death and guns.
Well, that's a great call. Thank you very much. I agree. I'm not supportive of arming our school teachers or our school administrators in the classrooms. I think that's a bad approach, and I did not support that. What we did last year in the budget, Senate Democrats collectively working with some Republicans, we put together a pot of money of $60 million, I believe it was, that allowed us to be able to make investments in school security measures. And some of those measures were, and will be, school districts are making proposals to the safety commission that we put into place. Senator Jim Brewster was the person who I appointed to that committee to serve in that capacity. And that committee is looking at proposals from all across the Commonwealth, and some of them are recommending ideas that you just referenced, being to figure out ways to make it easier to detect if anyone's trying to bring weapons into the school and what steps will need to be taken. But it goes beyond hardening our schools with respect to, you know, bars on the windows and doors being fixed and metal detectors and the like. We got to do more in the school building itself with our students and working with them to allow the opportunity to do have counselors available, whether it be psychiatrists, psychologists, school counselors, and the like. You know, some of them who are well versed in understanding some of the challenges that our young folks are facing in those high school years in particular. So that's what we've done. The governor's proposed this year $45 million again in that fund. So we're going to work to build that back up to 60 again as we go through the budget process, at least 60. And it may look to also expand some of the uses of those resources to better understand what's, you know, we'll have a year to learn from that. And I think that's the steps we're going to take along those lines. So that's a good question. I agree with you that we don't need to put these guns in the hands of our teachers, even if they're qualified to use them. I just think it creates a bad environment, for a learning environment for our kids. And kids shouldn't have to learn under any type of a threatening environment, in my view. So we'll continue to address that and take that into consideration.
Michael, thank you very much for your call. Remember, if you have a question for Senator Costa this evening, press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Karen in Squirrel Hill. Karen, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Thank you. Good evening, Senator.
My question
centers around the gun legislation. The City of Pittsburgh City Council recently was trying to enact, but it's really an illegal issue, and that it's really Harrisburg that has to enact gun legislation. And I'm wondering if what was occurring in the City of Pittsburgh will somehow stimulate the legislature in Harrisburg towards the type of gun legislation that the City of Pittsburgh was interested in?
That's a great question. I think the answer is yes. The activities, the horrific events at the Tree of Life on that Saturday morning have been a big part of helping to generate the conversation here along the lines of what needs to be done, but also the City of Pittsburgh in their effort to put into place in the City of Pittsburgh gun control measures that, in my view, are reasonable and responsible. The argument is that they are precluded from doing that because state law preempts local governments from doing that. So here in Harrisburg, there's a couple of tracks that we're proceeding down. One is, I believe my colleague, Representative Dan Frankel, has legislation that is looking at introducing legislation that would eliminate the preemption language. So it would allow the City of Pittsburgh to enact its own legislation as it relates to how guns should be handled in that particular city. But beyond that, we've also have state legislation that a number of us have been working on. For example, I think a lot of us believe that we have to have reasonable and responsible universal background checks. I mean, that's something to me it should be done tomorrow. Looking at, for example, bump stocks, looking at eliminating them and barring them at the state level, looking at the assault weapon ban that my colleague Senator Fontana has introduced, looking at the size of magazines that are part of those weapons. My view, I can't get my head around the fact that folks need an AR-15 or whatever the case might be for whatever purpose. I just don't think that that's something that the civilian should have. I think certainly our military and our police may have an appropriate use for that, but I can't understand how others might need to have that. Beyond that, lost and stolen gun legislation is something we've supported. We made some changes there a number of years ago, but we need to go further. I've been working on legislation with regard to what I'll call, if you know that an individual is dealing with mental health issues, that there be a court process that one could, a family member could petition the court to temporarily remove any weapon from the individual's remove it from an individual who may possess one if they're dealing with mental health issues. Again, going through a process to achieve that. And last year, we probably did the most significant piece of gun legislation in decades here in Harrisburg, and that was in our Senate version 501, which dealt with the individuals who have protection from abuse orders and also possess weapons. We reduced it from a number of many, many days down to 24 hours when they have to relinquish their weapons. And more importantly, they must relinquish it to a non-family member. In the past, you had so many days or weeks to be able to relinquish a weapon if you had a domestic violence order against you, and you can give it to a friend or a family member. That's no longer the case. So we're proud of the legislation we did last year, and our Senate was 501. It was part of five bills that we did in the Senate that I worked on. One was Elena's Law, dealing with the young woman who was tragically murdered because of PFA had been issued against a former boyfriend, looking to do electronic monitoring. We also have a couple of other measures along those lines that we'll continue to pursue. But I think most importantly, there are a number of issues that we have to deal with along the lines of gun control measures, but they need to be reasonable and responsible. And I want to be clear, this is not about violating the Second Amendment. It's not about taking certain guns out of folks' hands, lawful ownership. This is about putting together what are reasonable gun measures that many other states have in place, quite frankly, that Pennsylvania needs to address and have the dialogue and conversation about. But I think the Tree of Life incident has certainly brought to light the need to be able to do this sooner than later.
Aaron, thank you very much for your call. Again, if you have a question for Senator Costa, press *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to go to Nina in Penn Hills. Nina, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I am concerned about the welfare of children, and I was wondering how much in a budget there is allowed for the welfare of children in the sense of county, the CYF or whatever organizations there are. But my concern is the fact that there are so many children in need of advocacy and so forth. And I was wondering what there is in the budget for that and how can we endeavor to try to increase that or try to make some gains that way. There's so many children that have difficulty. Thank you for taking my question.
Thank you very much. And that goes to what I mentioned earlier, then the investments that we have to make, not only in education, but also in what I'll refer to as human service programs. We have early intervention programs in Pennsylvania, and we have early intervention services that are provided to help with the development of our children and looking out for the best interests of the children. This year's budget, I think, includes about $5 million there. But also what's good about that, we federalized that, and that brings down an additional $1.8 million to the Commonwealth. So these are the type of things that has been important along those lines. We also have $15 million initiative to increase services and provide assistance with those individuals who need, for example, if there's any intellectual disabilities in the issue, any issues along those lines. But when you say the welfare of children, those are just a couple of examples of the program. The best thing we can do for our kids is by making investments in the early learning programs, whether it be now we're begin to focus on 0 to 3, our toddlers, but also beyond that, and enhancing our child care programs and making more opportunities and more slots available for young boys and girls to participate in those programs and families having access to preschool through the Four Stars program, but also child care. Child care is so important to be able to have service, a place for folks to go to be able to get support, family support along those lines. So there's a variety of different ways we can help that, but this budget also addresses the need to be able to do that by providing about 6.8 in total that will be targeted towards early intervention programs. We also have the family support centers that we have. We drive resources through them and other organizations along those lines that help us do what needs to be done. It's a collective effort to be able to do all that.
Nina, thank you very much for your call. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Al in Penn Hills. Al, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Thank you. Good evening, Senator Costa. How are you, sir?
I'm well, Al. Thank you for participating.
Thank you. Two questions, sir. Well, first off, thank you for your time and effort for the residents of this region. Basically, it is probably unsaid and not heard enough. But I have two questions for you, sir.
Yes.
First off, the enacting or making more stringent laws for the protection of police officers who are injured or killed in the line of duty by persons who are committing crimes. Second question is, the Penn Hills School District wants to basically go over what the state allows for taxing purposes. And due to today's grand jury report, that no one's going to be held responsible for all this money that is owed. Now, I understand that you basically gave a grant of like $2 million and basically appreciated, but as of right now, this would be the fifth year Penn Hills residents have been taxed, and it's been going up and up and up. So is there any vehicle that could be used to help this situation out?
Yeah, let me start with the first question. You know, as it relates to enhancement of penalties for those individuals who would commit crimes against officers, I would support that. And I think we've taken that into consideration, and particularly that's taken into consideration at the time of sentencing, the egregiousness of the particular offense. So I think that's something that certainly merits consideration of a form of legislation, but I know we do have that as part of our sentencing structure. As someone is sentenced, whether it be the standard range or mitigated range or the aggravated range. And I think that may be one of the things that may fall into the aggravated range, and I know it has in years past. With respect to Penn Hills School District, and I've been working for a number of years with this administration trying to right the ship as a result of things that occurred back about 8 or 9 years ago. I think it's the origin of their financial situation rests with borrowing that was done and construction that was done, that they were either misled or weren't able, you know, just simply didn't understand what was taking place with respect to the level of borrowing and the ability to pay for it. As we fast forward, and now it's put the school district and the residents in a terrible position where, as you mentioned, this could be the fifth year in a row with a property tax increase for school district property taxes. What we have to do now is look at what occurred, and put into place, I think, the financial safeguards that are important. That's why it's important that now to have the financial recovery officer in place. We had the situation where the last couple of years we've been able to get $2 million a year extra for the Penn Hills School District, and that came with what was called Watch, School Watch. And that Watch had technical assistance to the school district to be able to assist them in trying to figure out a plan to implement that would help them get to the next stage. Now we're at the next stage where after that assessment is done, the financial recovery officer comes in and puts into place a plan to assist the school district in advancing its financial situation going forward. And the school district will have input in that plan, but at the end of the day, it is the state's financial recovery officer who puts the plan in place, and the school district needs to implement it. And I think that they will. The current administration, in my view, has done a good job of addressing the needs as best they can. They were dealt a pretty horrible hand when Superintendent Hines came in, and I quite frankly, I applaud the work that she's tried to do. She's tried to be fair and balanced with respect to the impact not only on teachers and administrators, on programming and the like, but as we go forward, they have a significant hole that they're trying to dig themselves out of. I do believe what is positive out of this is that we'll put into place a plan to right the ship. With regard to the tax proposal that's currently before them, I think that's something that the Department of Education will decide. As I understand it, I'm not seeing the proposal, but as I understand it, the request to exceed the index is a modest increase over the index, and I'm not certain, and I also believe that it's one of the things that, quite frankly, is customarily granted to school districts. However, I won't know what the answer might be in this particular case. It would also be part of what the Financial Recovery Officer thinks is necessary along those lines. That being said, what one has to think about is what's the impact of not having those revenues available. Does that mean that we are going to cut more teachers from the school district, more programs, more extracurricular activities? Somewhere a cut has to occur. And my fear is that what I'm most concerned about, certainly concerned about the financial situation and the impact on the residents, but also worried about the students who attend the Penn Hill School District. I want to make certain that they're able to get the best education possible. What we have to separate out is the financial situation from the academic side. And I think the academics have been solid and stable. And what we don't want to do is undermine the ability of the school district to continue to provide a strong academic situation and environment for the students. I got to tell you, yesterday I had the Penn Hill students, the football team, up here. And I would tell you, to a man and a young lady, they were gentlemen, they were well-respected. They respected the folks who were here. They were a good bunch of individuals, and that's what we want to be able to see going forward, educating kids along those lines that are role models in their community as students, but also beyond that when they do the academics. I think we had some 20-some kids who were here who were honor roll students, and four were high honors. That's the kind of stuff that's important, and that's the message we have to deliver to the residents of Penn Hills and surrounding communities. So we've got a good school district, particularly on the academics, because the work is being done by the administrators and teachers. But we have a financial hole we dug ourselves into, and we've got to work our way out. So I'm sorry for the long-winded answer, but those are my thoughts on where things are at. Things got messed up along the way. They've been trying to fix it, and we still have a lot. You know, our journey's not over, and we have to continue down that path.
Al, thank you very much for your question. We're going to go back to the caller center, but before we do, just a reminder, if you have a question for Senator Costa, you can press *3 on your phone's keypad. That's *3 on your phone's keypad. Senator, we're going to Denise. Denise, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Good evening, Senator Costa. And first of all, thank you very much for acknowledging the job that the teachers and administrators do in Penn Hills. My daughter is an assistant principal at the elementary school, and I think that sometimes with this budget situation, we forget that we have some very qualified people who, in spite of the storm, have decided to stick around. But my primary question was, in talking about things that are going to be done for the schools and in terms of school security, quite often it seems that a lot of the times the weapons that are being brought into schools are being brought in by students, not by people outside of the school. And when one looks at the history of these students, most of these are students that have been bullied. So what type of provisions are going to potentially be made to better train personnel in the school to be able to look at and recognize when you're getting into a danger zone? Because too often the solutions that they are offering for kids that are bullied is really not sufficient. And they're not doing as good of a job as I think that they could in terms of being able to recognize those danger areas before it gets to that point. So is there something that in the process of the funding that we can make people better equipped to meet the overall needs of our children? And that starts with recognizing those students that are creating an uncomfortable and unsafe situation for other students.
Thank you very much. I think the opportunity for our school districts to do prioritize how we address bullying and working with our teachers to identify and school administrators. We have done legislation in the past as part of the safe school programs that we have in Pennsylvania, and the school district have an interest in doing that. They need to make that part of their curriculum in terms of how they're going to deal with those programs. As it relates to resources, again, this goes back to the $60 million I referenced last year in the governor's proposal for 45 that would allow for those type of very specific programs, teacher training along bullying and cyberbullying in particular, and how to recognize it and see it. Those would be something that the school district could request from the School Safety Commission to be able to get resources to implement a program along those lines. And as we go forward with additional revenue along those lines, we'll be able to continue to make those investments to support those programs. So it's acknowledged and recognized. We passed some legislation a couple of years back to require it as part of their curriculum conversation. But now the scope of the new legislation that we did last year would allow for that to be part of it.
Denise, thank you very much for your question. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Amy. Amy, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi. This is Amy from Swissvale. And it was brought to my attention recently the number of trains are really going to increase in frequency after the completion of the Pittsburgh Elevated Rail project being undertaken by Norfolk Southern. So I just have been trying to research this and just spent a couple hours online looking at the PA rail plan. And it seems that because Norfolk Southern is privately owned, they're not required to precisely divulge what their plans are going to be for using the railroad. So I wonder, if one thing, how do we find out exactly what their plans are going to be? And two, they seem to say they're doing this to shave 3 hours off of their transit time by moving more traffic onto the main line off of the Mon line. But it seems like this is going to severely impact some very densely populated areas for their sake of saving this 3 hours of shipping time. And it seems that we weren't well informed, and because their plans don't have to be divulged, it doesn't really allow for any comprehensive planning as far as East Shore development. I mean, maybe people are developing things that will want to be like outdoor cafes or something, but meanwhile, this train traffic is going to increase so exponentially that it's just going to be kind of miserable to be outside. So we may be shooting ourselves in the foot with things we're doing, not being aware of their plans. So can we have some input into this, or can they be forced to say what their plans are?
I don't know. Probably the most difficult group of folks to deal with in my tenure has been the railroad. And I think, and I know we can work through the PUC to some degree, but their jurisdiction is limited as well. There have been a number of meetings that I've been a part of and others have been a part of just more recently in Wilkinsburg with some officials in Wilkinsburg. And also I convened a meeting about 6 months or 7 months ago of elected officials over at the community college. We talked about it because the issue you raise, runs through, Swissvale and through Edgewood and I believe through Southside and over the North Shore. So there's a significant impact along those lines and the changing of the lines and the like. I don't know to what degree we can force them to divulge their plans. I know that they've discussed with us what they plan to do with respect to the volume and the double stacking and the like, but I don't know more how much more specific they'll be able to tell us. My big concern is what type of toxic materials are they transporting, and I don't know to what degree. I don't have a complete handle on what is permitted and what's not permitted. Particularly when you're running through densely populated sections of the city of Pittsburgh. So I will tell you that I need to do more work in that space to find out what we can and can't do. I know the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania through the Department of Transportation is very much involved. There's a $20 million state grant that's been given to them that I think some of us have been pushing them to maybe reconsider that. Until we get a better handle on the situation. That's our conversation with our District 11 executive. But I think we have more conversations along those lines, and I pledge to you and others that I would continue to look into it and maybe do a report of some sort to folks along those lines.
Amy, thank you very much for your question. Senator, we're going to go to Enid in Point Breeze. Enid, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Senator Costa, Thank you for taking my question. A previous caller asked you about your support for gun legislation, and you clearly expressed that you were all for it. I'm also wondering whether there's a role for the state to play in making the case that we need to control gun violence because of the public health impact, and we need to fund appropriate research in the public health impacts of gun violence as well. And I'm not just thinking of things like people who have mental illnesses being prohibited from getting guns. I'm also thinking about the impact on children whose parents won't let them play outside because they are legitimate, the parents are legitimately afraid that the kids could be the victims of gun violence in their neighborhoods.
No, I think that's a very, very good point. I think it's something we need to have a conversation about. I can't point to any specific state resources that would look to do that analysis or study. To me, at first blush, it sounds like it might be something we need to partner with in a public-private partnership, maybe with our foundations, to figure out a way to craft an assessment tool that looks at that and then reports back to us about what needs to be done. So I think it's a great point. I know that I agree with you. Folks have been impacted, are afraid of allowing their kids to go outside in certain neighborhoods, and that's not right. And we have to address that going forward. So I can't point to a specific thing in the governor's budget that will allow that to take place other than, say, some of the community. In this $60 million I referenced, there's $7.5 million that's been put aside for community violence programs. I also believe that if one of the organizations applied for that $7.5 million, that the subject matter you just defined would certainly be something within the realm of what could be done. I know that I think there are a number of communities in Allegheny County that have put together a comprehensive application along those lines. I can't tell you this. I don't know the specifics of whether it incorporates that, the community impact in that regard, but I do think that that's something that's worthy, and we should consider looking at it as we go forward in this upcoming budget. And then when the window opens up again for this type of, you know, community violence program dollars, that we may be able to look at something along those lines.
Ina, thank you very much for your question. Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Thelma. Thelma, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
I wanted to know what's happening with the fracking of the Edgar Thompson work. I called one time, the last time I was on your program, and I haven't heard anything since then. Is it still going on? Is it going to continue to go on? What's up?
That's a great question. I believe that it's slowly making its way through the, making its way forward, but I can't say for certain. It's been a while since I've talked to the folks down at Edgar Thompson. My conversations with U.S. Steel have been around the Clairton Coke Works. That we have a hearing coming up on Thursday. Very concerned about what's taking place down there and their lack of ability to put their arms around and address the issue. And you know, the time, in my view, has come that we need to take stronger steps to, you know, get them to come in compliance. So we've heard a lot about the good work the U.S. Steel does and a number of jobs, and I think that's important. But we also have to strike the right balance with respect to the impact on the community. And the same goes for fracking or shale, you know, Marcellus fracking on that particular site. My hope is that they would have community meetings, to discuss it even further. And but it is their property. And, you know, the health concerns that I see over at Clarence Coke Works leads me to possibly conclude that I'm not quite so sure they can be able to do the Marcellus shell work without having similar type problems. That's just my own personal opinion. So I'm concerned about what's going on there, and there needs to be a community conversation about it, in my view.
Thelma, thank you very much for your call center. We're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Joe. Joe in Wilkinsburg, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hello, Senator Costa. I'd just like to get your thoughts on starting up a Works Progress Administration program for tearing down old homes, fixing bridges, roads, or else even rebuilding on those spots. And I have one comment from a previous question you were just talking about, the double stacking on the railroads. That'll cause major problems for people that use Air TV, because the single boxcars knock out signals now and change your channel. That was just a comment, though.
Well, I think I think you're right. I think that they do cause concerns, but What was your question again? I'm sorry, I was distracted for a moment. I'm sorry.
Okay, so is possibly starting up a Works Progress Administration program to
tear down
old homes or rebuild bridges, roads, whatever.
I think that's a good idea. I think that's something that we need to explore. I know we haven't had that in Pennsylvania for a long time. I think the best way to approach that would be to put resources in the hands of the folks who understand and do it well. But I do think that's a conversation that could be had about putting together those type of work groups to be able to do that. And there are community groups that do different types of things along those lines. I mentioned rehabbing homes, for example. There's groups that do that, and we need to work to be able to support those groups in a similar way along those lines. Thank you.
Joe, thank you very much for your question. Senator, we're going to go to Barbara in Penn Hills. Barbara, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Yes, as I listen, I thank you for everything that you do. But my question was mainly when you talked about Penn Hills School, and I guess that eliminates for the senior citizens, they were talking about where we didn't have to pay school taxes because we don't have any children in the school, and we still have to pay high school taxes. So I don't know where that would go. The other question was that as far as young men going into prison, and I don't know if they still have programs like they used to give them some type of trade when they come out, then have some kind of companies come and follow through and help them to get jobs, just like you do the veterans. Because when they come back out in the street, this is where your violence is incorporated by them coming back out. They don't have anything, so they go back to things that there is normal for them. Then they're back in jail, which is normal too for them. And there should be something done on that line. And also when you talked about CYF, there's money allocated for them. They, I feel, should take and look at some of those kids that come from out of CYF. If they did a study, they'll find out a lot of these kids, not the majority, but a lot of those kids come from those homes that were kids placed in the care. They need follow-up on those kids and see how they're doing. Give them help because some of their parents were on drugs and they never really determine the effects of those drugs on those kids as they got older. Some of them become violent. We don't know. And like the lady said about kids being able to come out in the communities, they need to come in to the inner cities, communities, and see actually what they can do to really help these kids and help the parents to do the jobs they have to do in order so it's safe within the city. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you very much. Those are all very, very good points. I know I just visited a place over at 7800 Susquehanna Street. There's an entity, and I can't think of the name of it right now, that works closely with those men and women who are recently incarcerated or having barriers to employment, doing different types of work in the community, but working to provide the skills and training that's necessary to be able to support them, to be able to develop a trade, and then finding them employment. And the success rate, once they work through the program, I think the placement rate is about 85-90%. So those are the type of investments we need to make, and we've made those investments. With regard to the school property tax issue, if you don't have any kids in the school, you shouldn't pay. That, I'll be blunt, that's not going anywhere. I don't think that'll be an issue going forward. We have several senior programs in place for senior citizens to be able to enjoy benefits of not having to pay the full amount of the property taxes, the senior property tax, the property tax rent and rebate program. The exclusion that deals with the Allegheny County does as well locally. And I think, we're a commonwealth as a whole, and our goal is to provide, an educate. Our obligation and moral obligation and constitutional obligation is to provide a public education system, and it needs to be participated in by everyone who owns property. That's the way we do it now. If that would change, it would have a different impact as we go forward. But if we don't do it this way, we would be shifting it to some other mechanism, would probably be equally disproportionate to another group of folks. So at the end of the day, that property tax relief conversation, particularly for our school districts, is going to continue, and I expect that we'll probably hear something in the next several months along those lines.
Barbara, thank you very much for your caller. Senator, we're going to go to Noreen. Noreen, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa. Noreen, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Senator Costa, I appreciate all your efforts that you have done for everybody, and everybody has their thing. And I feel that mine is kind of, you know, it's incidental with all the other things that you have to deal with. But I was wondering if you live in a senior high rise and you have to deal with it's the TV service, and every time it has gone up, and I tried to find out if you're a handicapped person and you have to depend on your TV service. I know it's very incidental, but is there a way that they start out with a price, basic price of $99, but then all of a sudden you're paying now it's $139, and the next 3 weeks it's going to go up because of taxes, and it's only going up 1 cent, but that three months of 1 cent, then the next thing you know, it's gone up more than 1 cent, and it has to do with taxes. And I, as a handicapped person, and have to deal with the TV service that I have, and really, they don't allow for you to say that, you know, you don't want all the programs that they offer.
Right. You know, you're referring to the bundling that occurs, which I think is problematic. I need to double check to see whether or not they offer individual services. When you think of bundling, it's TV, which is your cable, it's your phone service, and your internet service. If you're only looking to just do one or two of those, they should be able to do it that way. We've not increased any taxes, to my knowledge, in the last several years on cable services along those lines. But I do think they need to do more along the lines of making available to folks, particularly the individuals who are disabled or on fixed incomes, a level of the rates that are appropriate to allow them to enjoy the services that are there. I place myself on the Communications and Technology Committee here in Harrisburg, and there are a number of issues. I did that for a reason, to work on a number of issues along those lines that I'm hearing about, related to Comcast and other folks, Verizon and AT&T and everyone, quite frankly. So that's important. I also suggest that maybe you reach out to Congressman Mike Doyle's office. Congressman Doyle serves as the, given that the Democrats are the majority in the U.S. House of Representatives, Congressman Doyle is the senior member or the chairperson, majority chairperson of the Communication and Technology Subcommittee, which has jurisdiction over not only cable television and the like, but also the internet and all those type of things related to communication and technology. And I think he would welcome your comments along those lines and the need for that as well. He's in a position, quite frankly, to talk to the CEOs of some of these companies. I mean, I do. I talk to David Cohen and others from Comcast. But I think a consistent drumbeat that gets, you know, more frequent and louder, I think, is going to be helpful in that regard. But thank you for your call.
Maureen, thank you very much for your call. Senator, we're going to go to Dean in Squirrel Hill. Dean, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Good evening. Thank you. Two issues. One, I want to circle back to the war between UPMC and Highmark. And second, I want to comment on the Pennsylvania Act 112, the new Patient Notification Act. A friend tried to schedule an appointment, a friend with Medicare, at Highmark Secondary, tried to schedule an appointment with a neurologist at UPMC. They were flatly turned down, saying that they don't take Highmark insurance. Now, what was of interest is that separation doesn't go into effect until July, if I'm not mistaken. And it brings me to a concern that perhaps all citizens should be better educated by the state as to what their rights are in terms of navigating this separation war. And patients are being deprived of care, they're being threatened, they're being turned down. And it's very clear that the offices, or at least this one office at UPMC, didn't know what the rule was. As far as the Pennsylvania Act 112, the Patient Notification Act, Another friend got a generic letter from one of the hospitals telling them, urging them that they need to hear from their doctor about a test they had. They didn't mention what test. The person had about 10 tests and had no idea, and multiple physicians had no idea who to contact. So that act has well-intentioned, but it has significant unintended consequences. And I would urge you to clean that up.
Yeah, we would take a look at Act 112. I think it's important that, you know, we should not be being required to take tests that are unnecessary. It just adds to the high cost of health care. But as it relates to informing or educating the public, one of the concerns that I had back in September and October, as UPMC and Highmark were competing for our senior population, our Medicare Advantage programs, the miscommunication that was going back and forth on both sides, quite frankly. And that's not good for the public. And I think we have to take steps to be able to do that. I do believe that Thursday there will be an announcement that will be made that I think may try to acknowledge that there's been misleading information and a deviation from the mission of these charitable organizations. So I think steps will be taken along those lines as part of that conversation going forward.
Dean, thank you very much. Senator, we're going to go to Jim in Squirrel Hill. Jim, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Well, you know, thank you. I want to know why the roads are in such deplorable condition, especially interstates, like coming from the airport. There's potholes there at high speed that could damage cars, and they've been there for weeks now, and nobody does anything.
Well, I've taken note of your concern. I will communicate it to PennDOT, the district engineer, to address that. You know, for a long time we had not been properly invested in our highways, in our roadways. And when we did Act 89, we put together ramping up to $2.5 billion in those investments along the lines of roads and bridges. And maintenance is a big part of that. Part of it is related to seasonal activity. But other, you know, I mean, the freeze and thaw of our region, as we know today, I think today was in the mid-50s, at least it was here in Harrisburg. And I know that in just a week ago, we were below zero. So I think that does have some impact along those lines. So I do think that we need to address it. And I will make certain that the particular issue that you've referenced on the parkway from the airport is addressed. The turnpike, while the tolls are very high, they're going through a rebuilding process right now to rebuild just about every mile of the turnpike. And there are significant stretches that it's a very pleasant ride, very wide. And I think that's what people would like to see, and they like to see their dollars being able to go towards something along those lines. So I'll pass it on, and we'll go from there.
Senator, we're going to go back to the callers. We're going to go to Douglas. Douglas, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hi, Senator Costa. Thank you for your time and answering all our questions, because it's very informative. But
thank
I
you.
Do have a question about the water and sewage company. Their practices of how they're treating people when you didn't get bills for months, I think over a year, and then when you get a bill, it's so high you can't afford to pay it no one-time thing, you know?
Yeah.
And our lead pipes, a lot of people, I know they replaced a lot of them, but I like to know if you have any information on how you can have it done to your home, because lead in your water is very dangerous. I don't even drink the tap water anymore. I buy bottled water.
So as it relates to how they work with you and steps they take to whether it be to collect bills or to do some enforcement, there's laws in Pennsylvania that limit what they can and can't do, particularly as it relates to shutoffs and what they can and can't do with regard to payment plans, et cetera. So if you have any issues along those lines, please call our office and we'll work with you to work with if it's Pittsburgh Water and Sewer or if it's Wilk Penn Joint or whoever it might be. With regard to the lead issue, we've taken a lot of steps to try to address that. A year and a half or so ago, we passed legislation, myself and Senator Fontana, working on the issue of being able to use public resources to replace private laterals. Those are the lines from the main line into the home. Everyone's talked about, you know, fixing the public side, but if you fix the public side with respect to lead in your water, you're only fixing half the problem. So we're able to get legislation to authorize that. Then we followed it up with a chunk of money from the government here. We worked closely with Governor Wolf to be able to drive out a $10 million grant to the city of Pittsburgh, as well as a $40 million loan to the city as well, to be able to implement to a much greater degree and a lead line replacement program that's undergoing, that's going on right now. And there's more work we need to do along those lines. A number of years ago and more recently, I shouldn't say more recently, but the PWSA have had many challenges. But I think they've, in my view, they've taken some significant steps to be able to right the ship, so to speak. And I think they're working towards trying to resolve the water quality issues in Pittsburgh as fast as they can. It was disappointing to see that they failed to notify people about line replacements, that they violated the law and resulted in Attorney General providing, I think, a significant number of criminal complaints against the agency. My hope is that that'll be resolved quickly. They'll be fined appropriately, but then we can then move on and continue the work that's being done. They have a rate increase before the PUC. If we want to fix the water problem, we have to pay for it, because for decades and decades and decades, we had our head in the sand. We didn't want to address the problems at Alcosan. It was poorly managed, quite frankly, and we just ignored the situation. Well, now the roost has come home to roost, or whatever the saying goes, and we have to now pay to fix the infrastructure. And that's one of the things that's pending before the PUC, a rate increase that would work to be able to fix that situation. And it could be implemented in the next week or so. Time will tell whether or not the PUC agrees with their request, or if they, you know, or they reduce some of the requests. But as we go forward, we're going to have to make the investments to support the infrastructure that needs to be replaced. The state has stepped up and given legal authority. The state has stepped up and provided $50 million, and 40 of which is a low-interest, long-term, super long-term loan that benefits the public as well. So that's the work that needs to be done.
Douglas, thank you very much for your call. Senator, we're going to go to Constance in Oakland. Constance, go ahead. You're live with Senator Costa.
Hello. My name is Constance Bailey, and I'm a retired educator. And I really appreciate all the things that Governor Wolf wants to do for education and all the other things. It's fantastic. And I hope that you and everyone else will work to make Pennsylvania a greater state. But one of the things that we have to address is the opioid problem that we have. There's too many people on drugs in this state and in this country. So we need programs, because what we're doing now is not working. So what are your suggestions, and what can we do as a people to help make things better?
Well, that's a great question. I think first and foremost is stay involved and stay committed. If you have friends or family who are dealing with an addiction crisis, to do what can be done to support in some type of rehabilitation or access to programs. Over the course of the past several years, we've put into place a number of mechanisms to be able to address the opioid crisis. First and foremost, about 2 years ago, we put, I think it was $45 million, I think it was, into what are called these centers of excellence around the state that provide wraparound services to those men and women who are suffering addiction, but looking and recognizing that it's more than just the addiction and the counseling that they need and the treatment, but rather it's also addressing the issues around maybe housing or mental health issues that are involved, or maybe it's work-related, those type of things. So wraparound services through the Centers of Excellence have been very, very positive. We've made a number of legislative changes that have been very beneficial, particularly as it relates to working with our doctors and requiring that our doctors have the opportunity to have, as part of their academic curriculum at medical schools, understanding the nature of prescribing narcotics. That's been, I think, very helpful along those lines, and that's something that's very important. We've taken other steps where we, for example, on naloxone, for several years now, maybe 3 years now, we've had a statewide prescription that the then Physician General, now the Secretary of Health, has put into place that says anybody shows up looking for naloxone, they have a standard prescription to be able to provide it to them. We've added millions of dollars to provide more naloxone, particularly to our first responders. These are things to combat it. What we need to do more of, and we did this in a couple of areas, we need to do more in terms of treatment. I've been a strong proponent and have been fighting for legislation that would look to the pharmaceutical companies to be part of the solution of our opioid crisis. I believe that they need to be asked to provide an assessment on narcotics sold in Pennsylvania, take those resources, put them into a pot, and drive those resources out to our communities in support of treatment facilities and treatment programs. That's how I think we do it. We're not going to be able to do it in a piecemeal fashion. Treatment in a piecemeal fashion or a short-term fashion is not going to work. We need more providers. We need more treatment folks, but we need the resources to be able to support that. Second thing I think we would need to do that I'm working on is allowing folks the opportunity, if they have a loved one and they know that a loved one is dealing with an addiction and they want to get that loved one into a particular type of counseling or treatment or inpatient treatment, that they have the ability to go to an agency, the county agency, county assistance agency, or and be able to petition the county assistance office and a county assistance person to allow for an assessment to be made of that individual. And after that assessment comes back from a physician, that recommendation from that physician would then be provided to the single county authority who will be making that decision about placement. We need to be able to drive, and some folks call it, you know, mandated treatment. That's what I call a mandated treatment from loved ones. I've talked to dozens of families that have lost loved ones, including my own family with my nephew, that talks about what needs to be done. We can't let families sit by on the sidelines and try to help themselves. They need tools from us and the legislature. They need tools in the community. They need the ability to get their loved ones into the treatment that's there, and we need to provide the treatment. It's a moral obligation, quite frankly, that we've not done enough with, as you said, and I look forward to working to be able to do more along those lines. But that is a top priority. In the governor's budget this year, he does add some additional dollars to continue to fight the opioid crisis. But there's not going to be enough because we're limited in resources. But that is something that is harming our communities, no matter what community you talk about. It's been harmful and it's been painful to a lot of people, and we have to do more along those lines. So,
well, Constance, thank you very much for your call. Senator, we're coming down the home stretch now. I know we've talked about a lot of things tonight and discussed many questions. You have some concluding comments for those that have joined us?
I want to thank everyone. We've gone over our length of time on the conversation because we have many questions about different issues. We probably have about 20 or so questions left that we've not been able to get to, and I apologize to those individuals who are waiting online. Please stay on the line and leave your name and phone number and address with the folks who are on the line. And then we will respond to your question in the form of a letter or possibly a phone call back to you, whatever way works better. But I really enjoy these conversations. This will be the first of a series of what I call community town hall conversations that we'll be able to do about these issues and pending before us, and we'll continue to have this dialogue. Folks, feel free to continue to email me or call me in my office at 412-241-6690. I'd be happy to chat about any of these things that we're talking about or things that I didn't talk about that you would like me to get my thoughts on or what's taking place here in Harrisburg or back in the district. So thanks again for everyone for participating. I hope you have a good evening, and I look forward to seeing and hearing from some of you as we go forward.